Welcome to the PapaCast. Interviews in the world of sports. Now here's your host, Bob Papa.
And we welcome you to another edition of the PapaCast. So glad you can join us. Getting ready for Super Bowl 50. So you're figuring, what's boxing have to do with it? Well, when you talk about big events, there's none other than Bob Arum, who's done it bigger and better than anybody in the world of boxing, and he takes a couple minutes to join us here on the show. Bob, thank you so much for your time. How are you?
I'm really good. I just got back from the great country of China last night, and I'm looking forward to the big event on Sunday. Should be a great game.
All right, so Bob, we'll get into boxing in just a bit, but you're celebrating your 50th anniversary in the sport, which is perfect because this is Super Bowl 50. Give the fans a taste of how you first even got into boxing.
Well, I got into boxing by handling. I'm a lawyer by trade, and I was in the Justice Department. And I handled the case involving the seizure of funds from the 1961 Patterson-Liston fight. And when I left in 65, I went with a firm in New York, and I started representing a company in closed-circuit boxing. I met Jim Brown, the football player, who introduced me to Muhammad Ali, and I became Ali's promoter. And my first fight was March 29th in Toronto, Canada. Heavyweight championship, Muhammad Ali and George Shabala.
All right, so you meet Jim Brown. So this whole thing is coming full circle here with it being Super Bowl 50 and you're 50 years in the sport. You are a huge fan of the National Football League. And growing up in New York and, you know, just being part of that whole environment, you meet Jim Brown. Did you guys hit it off right away? I mean, how does that relationship develop and grow?
Yeah, it was really, really strange because this company that I was representing, they were doing a fight also from Toronto, and it was on closed circuit then, and it wasn't doing particularly well, so they asked me for my advice as to what they could do to hype up the fight. And this was 1965, and at that point in American history, there had never been a black person who was a commentator on a television show. And so I suggested that we hire, as one of the commentators, a African-American. And they gave me that job, and I tried Willie Mays. He wasn't interested, so I was referred to Jim Brown, who, unbeknownst to me, was finishing up his career in the NFL, and Brown accepted the job for $500. So when he got up to Toronto to do the telecast, I was the only person that he knew, and so we hung out together. We became friends, and he said to me after it was over that I shouldn't be the lawyer for these guys. I should be the promoter, and I said, well, I didn't know anything about boxing, and there was only one guy that meant anything, and that was Cassius Clay, as he was sort of known then. He said, well, he'll introduce me to Ali. 2 months later, he did, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. 50 years of the biggest events in the sport. You've been behind them as far as putting them together, all the super fights over the years. I want to keep it to football here at the beginning here because you have a lot of friends in the National Football League. You know, Jerry Jones with the new stadium in Dallas, you put a fight there. You're from Brooklyn. You got to have some ties to Al Davis, I'm assuming, right?
That's correct. Al was a very, very good friend of mine, very good friend, and so was Bob Tisch. And you know something? Say you talk about ties to football. I've had season tickets for the New York Football Giants since 1957. So when you go back, I've been a ticket holder of the Giants before Steve Tisch or John Mara were born.
That's amazing. Well, who was your favorite player growing up?
Well, I loved the Giants, and I remember Robustelli, and I loved him. I loved Frank Gifford. I loved the quarterbacks, Charlie Connolly and Y.A. Tittle. I don't know if I had a favorite player. I don't think in football you have a favorite player. I think you have a group of guys that you really look up to as the basis for the team. And I remember the years they were not so good when we had to play up at Yale Bowl. And we lost all those games. The franchise was falling apart. I remember they had planes flying over wherever they were playing, whether it was Yankee Stadium or Yale Bowl, and even the first Meadowlands, attacking the team because they were so inept. And finally George Young was hired, and he turned the franchise around, and he brought in this amazing player named Lawrence Taylor, who was, I thought, one of the greatest football players I've seen. But you can't have a favorite player. You go back, Tiki Barber was this amazing running back. Phil Sims. I love Bavaro. I mean, that's another thing. You want to get me started. You talk about complaints about this general manager, about the team. I mean, the idea that he diminishes the role of the tight end. I think the tight end is one of the most important positions in football. Certainly as important as the left tackle. And the Giants have really fallen short lately in the tight end position. Look at the teams playing in the Super Bowl. You have Carolina. As great a quarterback as Cam Newton is, and he certainly is a great quarterback, that team would be really, really diminished without Olsen. I mean, Olsen is look how long the Patriots have been on top, and one of the reasons is because of the tight end position. Gronkowski is an amazing, amazing athlete. And the Giants had Bavaro, and then they had, what was his name again? The Shockey. Terrific tight end. And lately, even Boss wasn't bad. But lately they've had, very, very weak players at that position. They don't draft the tight end high in the draft, and they pay the consequences. And as far as Manning is concerned, I mean, you got to get him a really good tight end. He relies on that position.
It's great stuff. You should be an NFL analyst, Bob.
Well, maybe I should be.
Second career. You mentioned the relationships, and you've done big deals with Jerry Jones, friends with Al Davis. The art of making a deal. You've made so many of them. What's the thing that sort of crosses the lines? Whether it's an owner of an NFL team or it's Bob Arum doing a promotion and doing a TV deal, in order to get a deal done, what's the most important thing in your opinion?
Well, the most important thing in making a deal is to develop trust in the person that you're dealing with. If you don't have that trust, and if he can't rely on you, and if it's all antagonistic, then it's very, very difficult to end up with a deal. And I don't call it the art of making the deal, because a man who is a real danger to this country has used that as a title for the book. And I think that he doesn't have really... he may be able to bully through certain deals if he has economic power over somebody else. But his idea of making a deal by bullying somebody is not necessarily going to work in many, many cases. And I would think that he would be an absolute disaster for this country. And I think people ought to, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, ought to step up and stop him as soon as possible.
Making reference, obviously, to Donald Trump. But, you know, you've had contentious situations over the years. Obviously, you've kind of knocked heads with a lot of different people. But at the end, Bob Arum comes out on top. There's been a lot of guys that have made a run at you and made a run at Top Rank as far as trying to challenge you in the game. You're the guy that's still standing and standing strong. What do you attribute that success to?
Well, again, you know, people, particularly in this business where there's a low threshold of entry, can come in and can attack, and that's okay. You stand up for your position and you defend your position and you do what you have to do, but you have to always be innovative. Because if you're not innovative and you stand your position and you have the same old, same old, same old, you're going to go down to defeat. So to defend an empire, you have to open up new markets and think of new ways to do business. Now, we were on the forefront of really developing closed-circuit television and then pay-per-view television, and now we're on the forefront of opening up global markets. I just came back from Shanghai, where we put on a tremendous event on Saturday in Hong Kong, in Shanghai. We had 12,000 people, and the national hero has won 2 Olympic gold medals. Zhou Shiming looked tremendous winning a fight. I mean, it was just an unthought of success. I mean, how unbelievable everything came together. Our first report from one of the websites that covered the fight was 5.5 million people watched from that website, and it looks now that we're going to have a viewership of Saturday night's fight in China of 40 to 50 million people, which is a tremendous success. We're beginning to develop great sponsorships, and business is really healthy in China, and our Chinese partner is very, very good. Look at what we did. We had the arena, which we opened to the public for the evening fight show, where we did over 12,000 people, almost a sellout. But we used the arena in the morning. We had 10 four-round fights for up-and-coming fighters in China that morning, 10 more four-round fights in the afternoon, and then 9 fights for the main show. That's 29 fights we did in China. We have hundreds and hundreds of kids lining up wanting to be fighters, coming from the amateur program. The talent in China is going to, once it's developed, it's going to be enormous. They're dedicated kids. They're kids that are, by and large, well-schooled in the amateurs. And, of course, there's a tremendous number of them, and they come from all over China. And I saw, for example, there's an area in China called Shenzhen, which are essentially Muslim kids. They don't look at all like the Han Chinese. They fought on the card. They look like Triple G, who's a Kazakh, because a lot of the people in that region from Xinjiang are Kazakhstan heritage. Really amazing. So China is going to be a terrific market. On the way over to Shanghai, we stopped in Hong Kong. We're doing a major event in Hong Kong, backed by the city of Hong Kong, having Rexo, their hero in the Hong Kong fight on May 14th. So we're keeping very, very busy in China. I'm very proud that on the fight Saturday in China, there's great animosity. There always has been since the Second World War between Japan and China. But we took a chance and we brought over the Olympic gold medalist in middleweight, terrific young man and a great fighter, Ryoto Murata, came from Tokyo, Japan, fight in Shanghai, fought Argentine fighter, won by knockout in the second round, and the crowd cheered him, which really excited me, which indicates to me that in the future we will be able to mix in more Japanese fighters into the Chinese program and vice versa. And we're certainly into integrated Philippine fighters in, and we're doing a lot in the Philippines. April 23rd, Nonito Donaire will defend his title against the top contender from Hungary in the Araneta Coliseum in Manila, where Ali and Fraser fought. And on that card, we have a top Japanese fighter, I.K. Yang, will be fighting. So, internationally, we're doing, unbelievable. And this spring, we're going to have fighting in the United States on premium television. A guy I think is the best fighter in the world, Vasyl Lomachenko, the featherweight champion, who puts on a real show every time he fights. So we're really busy, but we're emphasizing quite a bit international fighters.
Obviously, the big one stateside is April the 9th. Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley. What makes this fight special, in your opinion? And I think from the promotional standpoint, you got the two trainers kind of going at it a little bit. This has a nice little spicy promotion leading up to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I picked that. I wanted that fight, and I wanted that fight. They had fought twice before, but the Timothy Bradley I saw last time when he fought Brandon Rios after being trained for a short period by Teddy Atlas was a different Timothy Bradley. And this Timothy Bradley will be extraordinarily competitive with Manny Pacquiao. And I look to see a fight that will be an all-action fight. Pacquiao's an all-action fighter, and Bradley now is fighting with a lot more aggression and fighting from better angles. And I think this is going to be a sensational fight.
Bob, HBO is doing a documentary on you later in the year as well. Is it exciting and is it a little nerve-wracking knowing that like everything gets chronicled and put into one piece?
I got a thick skin, I don't really care.
You do?
I don't really care. You can't be in this business for 50 years. Not everybody, but top guys from time to time take shots at you. And you can categorize because it's personal. You categorize every shot that's taken at you as being unfair, even though half of them aren't unfair. And, but it's because it's directed to you, it suddenly becomes unfair. But if you don't have a thick hide, you can't survive. And I learned this relatively early on. A big major sports magazine, Sports Illustrated, decided to do a piece on me many, many years ago, I think 40 years ago, and if not more. And somebody got to the author of the piece and had financially compromised the author of the piece. So instead of being a fair piece or complimentary piece, it was an attack piece. And because it was Sports Illustrated, that was so big at the time, I was embarrassed. So for a couple of days, I wouldn't go out. And finally, I went to the Friars Club, because I lived near the Friars Club where I belong. And I walked in, and six guys come up to me and congratulate me on the piece. So then I realized that, you know, sometimes you get something written about you. It's really horrible. But it's about you, and people don't read. And so the fact that it's about you, they come up and compliment you. So from that point on, I didn't give a damn what was written about me, because I knew that 99% of the people wouldn't read it. They might read the headline. They see the piece is about you. Hey, you got a piece in the New York Daily News. You got a piece in the New York Times. They didn't care the fact that it was an uncomplimentary piece.
That is really funny. They probably read, like, the first paragraph.
Exactly.
They see your picture. They read the first paragraph. Hey, like, wow, Bob's in Sports Illustrated.
He made it.
That is a great story. Hey, over the years, you know, you've gone against a lot of different promoters. And who was the guy that was maybe the toughest to deal with, but you always felt like at the end of the day it was going to be a good deal both ways, and he might have been a tough across the table, but you respected?
Well, King, you know, Don King and I went after each other. We said very uncomplimentary things about each other. We competed like hell. But when the stars aligned and we had a fight to do together, we got it done. And amazingly enough, we were very good partners. We never had any battle about the result, about the finances, about how the promotion was run. And we did some of the biggest fights of the time, like the first Leonard Duran fight, the De La Hoya Trinidad fight. There were a number of events that we did together that worked out quite very fine. Now, he was a kind of negotiator. You'd make a deal with him. And then a week later, he said, oh, I forgot this point. And he would sort of renegotiate the deal. But once you got over that, he was a good partner. And pretty much he left the business up to us. And as long as, he participated in the press conferences, and he was a master at those. So I would say definitely King. Also, main events. They were tough negotiators, took their position. Kathy Duva's doing a very good job now.
The late Dan Duva.
The passing of the late Dan Duva. But most of my memories are dealing with Dan, and he was a very tough negotiator, but very fair. And I look back at those experiences with a lot of affection.
When you look back, obviously, you know, we got the Pacquiao and Mayweather fight. Do you wish that some way, somehow, it could have happened 5 years earlier?
Yeah, it should have happened 5 years earlier. There was a lot of posturing. And I don't want to spread blame, but there was one guy responsible for the fact that the fight didn't happen earlier, and the fight almost didn't happen, and when it happened, it was the most difficult promotion because of his machinations. It was a guy who hides in the shadows, pulls the strings, and doesn't make decisions. I mean, very, very bad experience for that fight. I mean, tickets weren't released until 8 days later, because he was trying to preserve tickets to scalp on the secondary market. I was very, very disappointed with the fact that the fight didn't happen earlier, and the fact that when it did happen, it wasn't a very good promotion. I think that people viewing that fight, I don't think gave Pacquiao credit for winning as many rounds as he did. I thought that it was a very, very close fight, and I didn't see it as a blowout in any way for Mayweather, who, to my mind, did very little in the fight.
Bob, we're talking with Bob Arum. Bob, you know, some will say, now, I've been working, calling fights since 89, not in as obviously as long as you have, but in my time at HBO, traveling overseas, doing the Olympics, and seeing, you know, doing a fight in Denmark and seeing the crowds, obviously you travel globally, you were just in China. And I'll always say to my buddies, this sport might be healthier than it's ever been because it really has become a global sport with, you know, the former Soviet Union countries all putting out really good fighters. But we, the American heavyweight and that piece of the landscape, you're a huge NFL fan. We're going to see athletes on Sunday on that football field that if they started boxing at a young age probably would have been off the charts. In your professional opinion, do you think the United States – will ever be able to produce a top-flight heavyweight again?
No, because not when there's so many incredible athletes going into the NFL and even the NBA. Don't forget the NBA. When I first started in boxing in 1966, my first fight, a lineman in the NFL was making the great salary of $6,000 a season. A season. So a lot of these guys went and played professional football because it got them some notoriety so they could get jobs in the off season on Wall Street and make Wall Street a career, because football didn't pay anything, and neither did basketball. But you just think, if basketball still didn't pay anything or paid very little, and I got a hold of LeBron James when he was 17 years old and sent him to a gym, I mean, could anybody beat LeBron James in a boxing ring? Probably not. Look at these specimens that are playing in the NFL and playing in the NBA. And imagine them as a heavyweight fighter, and you'll see the tremendous talent. When I first started in boxing, there was, of course, Ali. There was a young Foreman coming up. There was Norton. There was Ernie Shavers. There was Jimmy Young. The list went on. To make the top 15 in the heavyweights, you had to be something. There were heavyweights predominantly from the United States, but also all over the world, like Henry Cooper and Oscar Bonavina and Carl Mildenberger. I probably have left out a couple. But, you know, the plethora of talent in the heavyweight division was amazing. And as professional football and professional basketball became more and more popular and started paying these enormous salaries, that talent pool disappeared. Now, it didn't disappear in Eastern Europe because their major sport was soccer. And, a big 6 foot six guy really didn't make a particularly good soccer player.
Bob, in wrapping up, because I think of, you know, you just think of the size and the athletic ability of Cam Newton, who will play on Sunday.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
And what kind of heavyweight he would have been if you got him at a young age in that sport, or Luke Kuechly, the linebacker. And we could go through half the roster of these two teams. But you're going to be at the game on Sunday. What's your prediction? I mean, where are your dollars going in this game? Who do you like?
Well, a lot of the Super Bowl is defense. And Denver's defense is superb. That being said, the offense of Carolina is tremendous. I love Newton, I mean, he's an amazing talent. He can run the ball. He can pass the ball. The tight end is one of the best players on the field, Greg Olsen. They have a pretty good defense themselves with Kikli. Is the other linebacker going to play, Davis?
I think he's going to give it a go with the broken arm.
Yeah, right. He'll probably be in there. They're a good defensive team. I like Carolina. Now, whether 4.5 is too many points, that's what they do to you in Las Vegas. You know, I mean, probably, you know, I would bet the house if the points were 3 on Carolina. I still like Carolina even with the 4.5, but I certainly like Carolina to win the game.
He's been a Giants season ticket holder since 1957. He's rubbed elbows with world leaders, the top people in sports, and got into the game from a Hall of Famer, Jim Brown. He's in the International Boxing Hall of Fame, Bob Arum. Bob, we appreciate a couple minutes here on the PapaCast. April the 9th, Pacquiao Bradley. Don't want to miss that. Bob, we thank you so much, and we'd love to do this again with you.
My pleasure, particularly during the season when my Giants are playing. I hope they have a better draft than they've been having because they need a lot of talent. They have a pretty good base. Eli's a good quarterback. He has Beckham is one of the best receivers I've seen in a long, long time. You got a second. I mean, one thing that gripes me that people haven't talked about with this general manager is they had a guy on the team during preseason, a wide receiver named Jones, who came from the Green Bay Packers. And they cut him from the team, and he became the starter and the big receiver for the Packers. I mean, what was that about? Why did they cut Jones?
You know what? He didn't necessarily think he was going to get an opportunity and that they were going to go with the guys that they had, and clearly they could have used him. There's no question about that.
You better believe it. You better believe it. There's something wrong there.
Hopefully they'll get it fixed in 2016, and maybe the Giants will be in the Super Bowl next year.
Well, maybe they'll make me the general manager. I'll be happy to take a shot at it.
Well, you know, everything you touch wins. Bob, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Bob.
Bob Arum joining us here on this edition of the PapaCast.